Hi, this is Kathy Stucker. I'm the editor of My ID Matters, and today we're going to talk about COVID-19 and telemedicine and scams, because of course those things all go together. COVID-19 is speeding the acceptance of telemedicine because it offers consumers the convenience and safety of consulting with doctors and other medical professionals from the comfort of their own homes without having to go out. But remote medical services are not without risk. According to the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud, scams can steal patients' identities and defraud their insurance companies. Fraudulent telemedicine schemes can even damage patients' health. Today we are talking with Arunza Ifakachi, the Communications Director for the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud, about how consumers can safely access telemedicine services and protect themselves from the scammers. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate the invite.
Well, let's start right at the beginning, because some of our audience may still not be familiar with this. What do we mean when we say telemedicine?
Okay, so telemedicine is the ability to visit your healthcare provider, or any healthcare provider for that matter, by remote device. So that might be a phone visit, that might be a crack open your laptop and do a video conference, Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, WebEx. There are so many different platforms that are offering these types of services. But it's basically telemedicine is considered any sort of intermediary that you have with your doctor that's not where you're not physically present. And obviously, this is super important when we're supposed to be keeping our social distance from one another during this pandemic.
Yeah, I had a visit like this with my personal doctor last year where it looked like she was in her kitchen and I was in my house, and we just had a Zoom-type call. It was a proprietary medical service specifically for this, because they're real concerned about security, obviously. But, yes, we just sat there on the computer and talked to each other, and it was almost like I was in the office, except I had to take my own blood pressure.
Yeah, it for anybody that's ever had one of these appointments, it's like this moment, this aha moment where it's like, oh man, why haven't we been doing this all along? Obviously, we're going to get into some of that later on in the call, but I've had several telemedicine visits. My family is impacted by COVID-19. My son, who's 9 months old, was actually diagnosed by phone. He had tested positive. We went to a testing site to get him tested, but he started vomiting like this highlighter yellow color, and we called the doctor, and they said, okay, you need to check him into a hospital. So, you know, medicine is figuring out ways to do this, and at varying degrees, where they can say, all right, you may not have to come in person for a checkup. Or you can send me some pictures of a rash or something like that. But if it rises to a certain level of concern, then obviously healthcare professionals are saying, all right, this is the instance, this is the threshold where we want to see you in person.
Yeah, I had one circumstance where my doctor wasn't even available, and I actually did a consultation with another doctor over text, because all I needed to do was get a prescription, and I knew that because I was a recurring condition. And I'd never had a visit with a doctor over text before, and that was kind of interesting. But it worked very well for that particular situation. Obviously, it's not right for everything. So we've got an idea now of what telemedicine is. So how are the scams working? What are the scammers doing with this? I mean, obviously, I know who my doctor is. If I'm not dealing with my doctor, I'm going to know that. So how are the scammers doing this, that they're getting a hold of people's information or doing whatever they do?
The thing about this is that the scams are still the same. The basic plot points of each scam is still the same. They're just tremendously more scalable, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
There are certain barriers that a scammer has to overcome when you have to see somebody in person, for instance. So scammers are still calling people and saying, oh, you know, it seems like you qualify for a power wheelchair. But instead of convincing somebody to come down to Main Street to some fly-by-night office to come and, you know, get a five-minute exam in exchange for a $20,000 power chair, there, you know, you can make a phone call, and you can, in some instances, make the claim that you legitimately had a consultation and that they legitimately needed this durable medical equipment and that you legitimately billed for those things. So the ability to sort of scale these types of scams has improved dramatically. So as access has increased, so has opportunity for scams. So an example is there is data out that says that in January of this year, there were 129.5 million robocalls a day. That totaled 4 billion for the month. So if you're thinking about, if I'm an enterprising, you know, fraudster, I send out, I cast this huge net of, you know, pennies on the dollar for to place these robocalls. I've already sourced a list of consumer data either illegally or legally, and I'm just trying to get a hold. It's a numbers game. Whoever I can get in contact with, whoever I can get in touch with, and I just need to check off three or four things. Maybe I need a name, an address, a medical ID number, a plan, or something like that. And with that information, I can then move to the second piece of my scheme, where I'm authorizing fraudulent billing, or maybe I'm pushing somebody to a participating doctor that I'm paying kickbacks to. And for a five-minute consultation, I'm now billing for a four-hour, you know, a four-hour visit with a specialist. So it's all about, the scams are all built on the same building blocks. And depending on what the scheme and the scam is, depends on how much, you know, how much further down the lawn and down the line they can push the scheme and how much more money they can extract from these health plans. I think I saw an article recently, I think we put this out in our, we have a weekly newsletter called Fraud News Weekly that you can sign up for at insurancefraud.org. There was a story about durable medical equipment that was being shipped to seniors, and they had no contact. It was like one day a woman opens her door, looks down, and on her porch she's got a knee brace. She has no idea where it came from. She makes a couple of phone calls and finds out that her identity had been stolen. And like I said, with all the building blocks, I got your medical ID, I have your name, your address, maybe a social or something like that. I was able to fake a visit with the healthcare practitioner, fake a prescription for a knee brace, and fake authorization for that equipment, and then just send it. And the key to this scam is that ordinarily, most of these durable medical equipment shops have to have physical locations, and there has to be a visit from the state to verify their eligibility and the legitimacy. But that all got suspended during the pandemic. So now there are just these, you know, I just create a company on paper and then start rolling. So, and then it's like you shut this one down, you start another one. And until the physical locations open back up and the door-to-door checkups resume, this is a pretty viable opportunity. So it's kind of get it while it's hot.
Yeah, the scammers never miss an opportunity to scam people. They're great at that. Well, do they even send the equipment in every case? Do they sometimes just get the information, make the charge, and don't even provide equipment or services?
I mean, I think it all depends because it all has to do with who is in the know and who is not. I mean, obviously there are scams where people are recruited and they say, Mr. Johnson, it seems like you have the right type of arthritis, and if you agree to see this doctor, then we'll pay you, you know, $500. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is sign for a prescription for this compound medication cream. Compound meds are very popular in terms of scams. And basically what a compound med is these certain plans allow for really, really expensive medication that is that's sort of individually tailored to a patient. Let's say, oh, I'm allergic to one of these particular chemicals, so I have to use a different type of medicine. And the formulary that makes up that specialized medicine that's specially tailored for you in what is supposed to be a very rare instance can be very expensive. But, you know, plans recognize that this is important, that people get the care that they need. So scammers are taking advantage of this and saying, you know, okay, I'm just going to create a blueprint for how I can continue to authorize the most expensive formularies for you know, creams, those types of things that that help people, topical creams that help people. So this is one of the avenues that people go down. And so, yeah, sometimes you need to let somebody in on it on the front end. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you can recruit people without their knowledge. You can do the same thing to the pharmacies. At every sort of step of the ladder, the scammer has to make the decision, do I want them in on the con or do I want them on the outside unknowing? And there's risks and benefits to both. Mm-hmm. So I guess that doesn't answer your question directly, but it just kind of depends.
No, it's, but, yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do
multiple opportunities to do it. Yep.
Yeah, and I get a lot of calls. I'm not on Medicare, but I get a lot of recorded calls all the time saying, you know, Medicare has authorized certain forms of medical equipment and you may qualify and just call this number and we'll get you all fixed up. And it's like, no, even if I were on Medicare, I don't get my medical care by pre-recorded messages that come in spam calls. But apparently a lot of people will do that because they see a chance to get something free.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I keep going back to this because it's important to understand that in today's world, it's very difficult to understand, you know, fact from fiction. Mm-hmm. You see it in our politics, you see it in business, you see it in every facet of life because communication is so wide open, so globalized, so decentralized. You know, as individuals, we are awash in information. And what happens is it becomes very difficult to tell what is legitimate and what isn't legitimate. So, and again, the key factor is what sort of building blocks do I have access to build a scam? So if I can go to a public role and find all of the seniors in a particular zip code, okay, that's one way. If I can go on the dark web and, you know, purchase a data hack and get a trove of Social Security numbers, addresses, that type of thing. So basically these scammers are taking what are databases, spreadsheets, organizing them and saying, all right, I'm going to authorize robocalls to this particular group that meets this particular set of criteria. I'm going to run this script to see if I can get them to make this action or give me this information or authorize this. And then they go from there. And it's a pretty organized, meticulous, and pragmatic approach to scamming. And so a lot of times the best policy is, like you said, just hang up, not engage, not answer, because it is so difficult to recognize, is this legitimate, is this illegitimate, especially if it's happening to you proactively. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I like to do is to call, I go to the source, I verify anything, and basically my antenna goes up anytime somebody's asking me for a combination of name, address, phone, email, Social Security, last four of my Social Security, any of those things. They're all the fundamental building blocks of being scammed.
And data birth, you know, is real important too.
Yeah, date of birth. So yeah, all of those, like if somebody's asking for like three or four of those and you don't really know them, it's probably a bad idea to give that information or without hitting them with a real serious line of questions like, why do you need it? What do you need it? What do you need it for?
They act like they're from Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And so people think, oh, it's Medicare calling to offer me this. It's not. Medicare doesn't do that.
And that's the other thing that we have to do as the coalition and as fraud fighters is let people know what legitimate government agencies will do and what they won't do. The IRS is pretty famous for saying, you know, yes, this isn't, you know, if we're going to get in contact with you, it's going to be by mail. Mm-hmm. If you see us, you know, check your mailbox. That's where we're going to be. So anytime, you know, an IRS agent is calling you and saying you have 30 hours to respond to a $20,000 tax lien, it's the IRS's official position is that that's not us because that's not how we operate.
Exactly.
So, you know, exercise caution, exercise skepticism, And, you know, have patience, because these folks that are on the phone, on the other end of the phone, they're trying to close the deal. They're trying to get you to move as quickly as possible. You know, you can stop, you can wait, you can ask questions, you can ask for a callback number, you can cross-check that number with official sites, you can call your county health department, you can call health hotlines. There are so many ways that you can verify whether or not this is accurate, and odds are, you know, whatever somebody's calling you to do in a five-minute phone call conversation, you don't, you know, it's not that urgent. You can always hang up, ask a couple of people, you know, get some more information to figure out whether or not this is legit. And that particular piece has been very difficult with the coronavirus vaccines that are rolling out, and the way in which appointments are getting scheduled, because some of these health departments are proactively calling people to get them scheduled because they know some folks have trouble with internet access and all of these other things. So it can get very, very murky. But again,
yeah, people are getting calls from unknown numbers. It'll say unknown,
yep,
or anonymous or something, and it really is the legitimate number texting or calling. I've seen that happening locally here. So yeah, it's kind of messing with us, because that's the thing we always warn people about, and it's happening legitimately in some of these cases.
Yeah, and so again, I keep going back to it. You don't have to feel pressure to give any of that type of identifying information immediately. You can get off the phone. You can go online and check it out for yourself. You can call a trusted authority. I mean, you can call a police station. You call your attorney general's office, the prosecutor's office. You can verify this in a number of different ways. So whoever that person is on the phone that's, you know, pushing to get your date of birth and your Social Security number, you know, they're just going to have to wait. Because there's no, you know, free back brace in the world that's worth all of the heartache and consternation that can come from having your personal data compromised like that.
Well, and I think that sense of urgency they have is a clue right there. Anytime somebody is pushing that hard to get you to act now, it's usually not in your best interest. I mean, no matter what the issue is, if they're pushing you to do something right now, it's probably not necessary that you act now. It's probably that they want you to, because they want you to act before you find out what's going on.
And also, it's important to weigh the cost benefit, right? So this unknown person is proactively asking you or demanding that you give over this information, telling you that within moments you're going to lose out on this opportunity. But you also have to consider the flip side of, because we've all done it. We've all clicked on an email that we shouldn't have, downloaded a file that we shouldn't have, visited a website we shouldn't have, and felt like, oh man, my data just got, my information just got compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody's been notified you that, you know, your information was compromised in a hack or a data breach or something like that. But think long and hard about it and say, you know, am I going to feel good about this when I get off the phone if I never hear from these people again, or I get a surprise bill for thousands of dollars? One of the things that happens is once your information is compromised, one, it doesn't stop. It's not like, oh, it's a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Odds are that your information is in a database filled with other hundreds, thousands, even millions of other people. It continues to be passed around. It's not going to go away unless you do something to completely change your identifying information. So one, once it's compromised, it's compromised. And two, you know, let's say you get that back brace in the mail, but let's also say that the company, the legitimate company that mailed you the back brace, is looking for, you know, a sizable deductible that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And now your credit is ruined because they want to know where the balance is on your deductible, or, you know, this visit that you had with a specialist that you never actually conducted. You know, the scammers will bill the provider and get that reimbursement, but then you're left on the hook for the copay or
Ooh.
Something like that. And so those will pile up, and if you're not even in the loop, you don't know that it's coming, if you're not getting mailed these bills, there's all types of different scenarios where you can get jammed up over some actions that you had no idea were taking place or that you never authorized. And so there's a lot of financial ruin that can come from having your data compromised in that way as well. So you have to ask yourself, is it worth it to engage with this stranger that's calling me about whatever it is? Do I have to respond and turn over my information immediately? And oftentimes the answer is no. And especially for any of the audience that are seniors or just not confident in some of the subject matter that's coming across on the other side of the telephone line, you can say, wait a minute, I need to ask a trusted family member or advisor mm-hmm. or a professional or something like that, or make a phone call to a local government agency or something like that to verify. And if they jump off the phone or, you know, get skittish all of a sudden, then you know it's a scam.
Absolutely. Well, and the damage is not necessarily just financial, because it can actually damage your health in some cases with some of the things that may end up in your health records.
Right. That too.
So, yeah, because your medical records now, because most records are electronic, it will contain a lot of information. And if somebody else is using your information to obtain health care or using your information to order products and services and things that you didn't even necessarily get, that can still end up in your health record, and that can influence your care in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're dealing with any sort of step therapy medication or devices, and you know there needs to be proof that you've tried this particular medication, it didn't work out for you, and then you moved on to something else. I mean, if somebody else is interfering in that, that's certainly jeopardizing your opportunity to have, you know, the health care that you deserve and, you know, frankly, have paid for.
So basically what we want people to know is they want to be very cautious about somebody calling them on the phone or approaching them that they don't know and telling them that they can get this care or product or drug or whatever it is. What should they do if they're approached by one of these people, aside from hanging up? I mean, hanging up is obviously the first step, but is there anything else they should do?
When somebody asks you for your date of birth, social security number, any of those identifying pieces of information, it's okay to ask them why do they need it? What are they going to use it for? Like, you don't owe anybody that's on the other end of a phone line any information, especially somebody that you don't know. And any threats, pressuring, or anything like that, again, you don't have to respond or acquiesce to any of those sorts of pressures either. Like there's no invisible timer. And so if somebody wants to get a hold of you, especially in a way that's going to hold up in court or, you know, whatever, they're going to send that in writing.
Mm-hmm.
99% of the time. So stand up for yourself. Ask questions before you give over that information, you know, and don't be afraid to ask for a second opinion, to take down a number and call another agency to verify. Another good thing that I do is when I get the phone number, I'll take the phone number and type it into Google and type, you know, 256-555-2821, say, is this a scam? And a lot of times people have already reported these sketchy phone numbers to fraud agencies, fraud watch organizations, et cetera, et cetera. Another thing that you have to be mindful of is sort of what the best practices are. And I hate to use the word best practices when we're talking about fraud, but folks have found that people answer numbers that are similar to theirs. And if you've ever noticed that, the telephone numbers might be, you know, one or two digits off, and you're just like, huh, and you answer it. So even those, there's a lot of telltale signs that can tell you that this isn't a legitimate operation. Another one is sort of a bloop noise or mm-hmm. a little pop noise at the front of a conversation. That's an indicator of an auto dialer. And what that is there's technology out that allows one person to place multiple phone calls at once. And basically, what they're doing is the software can read whether or not an answering machine has picked up or whether a live person has picked up, just through, you know, how a live person would answer a phone versus how a computer would answer a phone voicemail, that type of thing. So when you hear that pop, that is alerting the agent that's just waiting for a live person on the other end of the phone to answer. And so when you hear that pop, they'll be dropped in. That person will be conferenced in with you, and now we're talking, and they're trying to tell you that they're from, you know, the IRS or, you know, Medicare or Medicaid or something like that. So that pop is normally a dead giveaway that that it's not a legitimate operation.
All right. Well, you've given us a lot of good information, and I think this is useful for everybody to have. Is there anything else that you want to make sure they know, or have we pretty much covered it?
You can check out our website at insurancefraud.org. We've got some great information. We push out a lot of consumer alerts. You can follow us on our social media at insurancefraud, and we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn, and just sort of stay up to date on what's going on. Our entire mission is to make sure that folks do not fall victim to insurance fraud. It costs billions and billions of dollars in economic loss every single year, and we want to stop that. And so, follow us. We've got plenty of information. All of our members and associates are committed to the cause as well. And you know, be safe and be skeptical. That would be my advice. And it's really unfortunate that scammers seem to have no conscience or qualms about going after people that may have difficulty with this type of technology. And especially in the middle of a pandemic, I think it's pretty heartless. But you know,
unfortunately, that's what scammers do. They've always been willing to jump in and take advantage of people at every opportunity. So. Well, I appreciate it. I think you've probably given people a lot of information that will help them out. And we've got a lot to think about now and a lot of things to take action on. And when we get those phone calls, we know not to talk to these people. But thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for having me on. I appreciate it.